Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Jeffrey Swartz, together with my colleague, Brendan Berry. We are both professors of law at Cooley Law School's Tampa Bay campus. And before I do anything more, I want to say that everything that we say, Brendan and I say, and the opinions we espouse are our opinions and our opinions alone, and not necessarily the opinions of the administration of Cooley Law School or its faculty and its administration individually or at large. Good morning, Brendan.
Good morning, Jeffrey. How you doing?
I'm hanging in there, as they say. And Before I forget, with us, as always, is our friend, patron, and all-around good guy, Hezzy Harris. Good morning, Hezzy.
Good morning. Good morning, Jeffrey. Good morning, Brendan. Always a pleasure.
Good morning,
I always
Hezzy.
Look forward to Tuesday.
Oh. So do we. Very much so. Let's see. We have so much to talk about. Some things are as disturbing as anything you could possibly imagine. But I want to start out with something that has been an ongoing disturbing as anything you could imagine, and that is the presence on the federal bench of Aileen Cannon and the fact that she is wholly and completely owned by Donald Trump. And believes that if she is successful at avoiding trying her case, that when Trump, God forbid, should become president of the United States again, she is the next nominee to the United States Supreme Court. There is no question in my mind that that's what she's attempting to do. And there's no question in my mind that Donald Trump doesn't need lawyers in that case because he has the judge. And she has to learn that she is not an advocate for one person or the other. Her inexperience, her authoritarian thought processes are becoming abundantly clear. And she is an embarrassment to the Southern District of Florida and continues to be such. A district which is renowned for some of the best judges ever to serve on the district bench in this country's history. What she has done now is that she decided that Jack Smith, who says there are certain documents which are so sensitive to our national security that they can't get permission to show them to anyone from the agencies that have classified them, that's denying Donald Trump access to documents that he had. We're talking about documents he had. And that he knows what's in them if he knew how to read. Okay, but they need disclosure of them, even though they are not enumerated in the indictment. This is a normal thing that happens in espionage cases, in case anybody didn't know that. And there is a mechanism for it, and it basically is the government comes in ex parte and they say, this is the document, this is what it says. The CIA or the Defense Intelligence Agency or whatever agency it may be says, we cannot disclose this document. That the person who would see it is not classified to see eyes only information, and the guy who was eyes only is a threat himself to national security. Not even in a skiff. We cannot let them see the document at all. And she's going to hold a hearing on it because she cannot understand, as she said, how they can fail to disclose documents which may have exculpatory evidence in them. Yeah, that's what they're for. That's why they want to see them. This, by the way, is a theory of how you defeat a national security case. We have had many spies who have asked for these things, and because we can't show them to the jury and we can't show them to the defendant, have their charges released, their charges and their penalties reduced rather than go to trial. It is a technique. It is a strategy. And most judges dispose of it very quickly. But she's got to have a full-blown hearing in March. Days long, she scheduled a whole week of hearings on this. And then says, then I'll decide whether I'm going to continue this case on the defense motion till after the election. She is bound and determined that this case will not be heard before the election because she knows this is probably the most, as damaging as the Washington case is, this is the most damaging to show he shouldn't be president. I'm sitting here telling you right now, and she'll, and I hope she's listening. I hope somebody goes to her and says, you got to hear what this guy's saying about you. He's a member of the Florida Bar. You should go after his license. Please go after my license. I'm begging you. Because truth, if spoken properly, is an absolute defense. And I am calling you out. You are as bad as he is. You have no business being on the federal bench. You should be working as a defense lawyer for the money that Donald Trump will pay you. Why are you working for $200,000 on the district bench for Donald Trump? He'll pay you millions to do what you do. And then people wonder why we have a problem with the thought processes of the public. Aileen Cannon, you have to resign. You have to go. You are incompetent. And if you aren't incompetent, then you are corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's how I'm starting the show. What you got to add to that, friend?
Well, no, I got a question to add, that's all. What does Jack Smith do about it?
There's nothing Jack Smith can do about it.
Yeah.
Okay, he can allege that she is biased and prejudiced, and she should have never had this case in the first place. Once they put her on the rack, when the 11th Circuit put her on the rack for what she did in the civil case, this case should have never been allowed to stay with her. And that I blame on Cecilia Altanaga, who is the chief judge of the Southern District of Florida. She could have stepped in. She had that power and given it to a senior judge who has handled cases, somebody like Stan Marcus, who's above reproach, who just retired from the 11th Circuit. Bring him back down to the Southern District of Florida. He was my neighbor. He lived three doors down from me for years. Perfect guy, as conservative as they come. The perfect judge to handle this case. Then there's others. There's a lot of others that have taken senior steps that would do a wonderful job on this case. It probably would be getting tried in January. Without any question. Especially when you have a senior judge who has nothing else to do but this case. So there's nothing he can do. I'm sorry. I wish I could say there was, but there isn't. He's tried. He actually scolded her and said, you're being manipulated by Trump, and she scolded him right back. Said, you don't talk to me like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a district judge. I'm brilliant. No, you're not. No one's going to buy you a Guinness. You're not brilliant, and you have no business being where you are. None, zero. I know law students could do a better job on this case than you. Can I be harder on her? Can I think of something better to say?
Oh, goodness.
What do you have to say for yourself this morning, Brendan?
Oh, God.
No. Don't call me that.
It's a hard act to follow.
Yeah. Right. Now.
We have a number of things listed to talk about.
Yeah.
Which one would you like to talk about?
Well, let's start with I think the most important issue in front of us, and this is, you know, if I'm sighing a lot this morning, it's because you get tired, don't you? I bet both of you do sometimes as well, where every time you turn around, you know, things are worse than they already were. It makes you wonder if, as a country, you know, or at least as the people who are paying attention, you know, if we're not going to have to try to use some strategies to preserve our mental health as we go through the next year plus. But the latest is Donald Trump's language, both on social media and in a speech that he read off of a teleprompter, in which he announced that when he returns to the White House, he is going to go after all of the quote-unquote vermin who oppose him politically. Thus using, and we have to stop just dancing around, not you and I, but as a society in our body politic, in our public discourse writ large, we have to stop dancing around the Nazi comparisons and the Hitler comparisons and just call them out at this point. He's actually inviting it. So let's not dance around it anymore. Vermin is language right out of Hitler's playbook. And there's a reason for that. When you are on the precipice of calling for political violence, or in the case of Hitler, genocide, what you have to do first, and again, there's a playbook for this. This is, none of this is accidental. One of the things you have to do as a predicate, right, to set the stage for that is to dehumanize your opponents so that your supporters and your followers do not see your opponents as humans. It's amazing to me that you can ever get a human being to think that way, but you can, to where they will, as recently happened in Israel, they will go in, slaughter people, slaughter babies, slaughter the elderly, torture people, because they do not see these people as humans. Donald Trump wants his followers to see anybody who opposes Donald Trump, that would be Democrats, liberals, ethnic minorities, gays, all of these people as less than human. Because only then can you ultimately do what he wants done, which is to take power and maintain it at all costs, including through violence. There are a lot of different you know, angles to take on this. One of his spokespeople, after, of course, he was called out on this language, doubled down and said, mm-hmm. you know, obviously Trump is not, you know, that's ridiculous to compare Trump to Hitler. And then he says, when Donald Trump returns to the White House, these people, their entire existence will be crushed. And so
he walked that back a little, though. He walked it back a little. Remember,
and said what their sad
said,
existence.
What I really meant to say, their sad existence.
Yeah, you talk with about a distinction without a difference, right? What difference does it make?
Exactly, but just to show you that he realized, maybe I said more than I should.
Yeah. So I don't know. We're going to talk about this more a little bit later too, I think. But you know, while the political punditry is going on and on about Joe Biden's age, we have the Republican nominee, and that's what he's going to be for president, flat out introducing fascism and fascist language into our politics. And again, we need to see it for what it is. And as I say all the time, it really is time to call the question. 2024 It's time to call the question. Americans, are you so upset about the price of a gallon of milk that you are willing to throw away the 200-plus years that we call the American experiment and hand this country over to Donald Trump and his ilk and flat-out end American democracy? Okay, I mean, so, yeah. Yeah, right. The price of milk is worth all that to you. As I also say all the time, you get what you vote for, right? That's the thing. And this right. happened in Germany, too. They chose Hitler. And
well,
he never left.
I want to be honest. Historically, they chose Hitler was the head of the second largest party in the country. He was made chancellor when von Hindenburg died, the president, who was like 89 years old,
mm-hmm.
And had been in bad health for a long time. He only had 33%, one-third of the representatives in the Reichstag, but he bullied his way into becoming chancellor for Hindenburg, and then assumed power when Hindenburg died.
Mm-hmm.
The German people as a whole, as a majority, never selected Hitler. Hitler rose to power with one-third of the vote. Sound familiar?
Yeah, it does.
Okay, just so you know. That historically is what occurred. In Nazi Germany in 1933. It should be noted, and in all candor, that Hitler in 1929 only got 5% of the vote. That's because things were great in 1929 until the stock market crashed and it cost you 5 million marks to buy a loaf of bread because of inflation and devaluation of their money, which many people saw coming after the Treaty of Versailles. There's many who believe, and I'm one of them, that World War I never ended. It was just a 20-year ceasefire. That's all it was. And that it was bound to happen based upon what the Allies did to Germany to end World War or to reach that ceasefire. But Hitler took power with only one-third of the people of the country actually backing him. So, yeah, but after that, nobody did anything to try to stop him. He burned the Reichstag. That ended them for a while. So, bad stuff. Trump said some things this weekend, but it's nothing new. It's not surprising. It's not shocking, but it's not surprising. The real problem here is that people are forgetting what we learned 10 years ago. We learned 10 years ago from Ivana Trump, not Ivanka, Ivanka's mother, Ivana, gave a deposition in her divorce case from Donald. And one of the things she disclosed was that Donald doesn't read. He doesn't read books. He doesn't read newspapers except for headlines. He doesn't read. And the only book she ever saw him read was a book that she bought him. Now, let's remember, Ivana was basically Eastern European, just like Melania, mostly anti-Semites. And she gave him a book. And he kept that book. He read it. He actually read it. And he kept that book in the nightstand, in the drawer in the nightstand. And the book was The Speeches of Adolf Hitler. And he read that book. Now, I will concede that after the divorce, based upon what apparently was an agreement between her and Donald, she recanted that. But you know what? The recanting it, she wasn't under oath. When she said it, she was under oath. I'm going to take that as the truth. And he read this book. He not only read this book, I want you to watch him when he speaks. I want you to see the gestures he uses. There's a series of photographs that you can find online that were taken of Adolf Hitler prior to his run for the presidency in 1929 after the Beer Hall Putsch and his being released after 6 months of a five-year sentence, for which he could have gotten life. And he rehearsed those gestures, the pointing out at people, the clenched fist at his chest with his, you know, in front of him, okay? The hand sweeping across the room. All of those gestures that you see Donald Trump use, those are the same gestures that Hitler used. He rehearsed them. He had pictures taken of himself as he practiced them. You know, the clenching of his fists to his chest, the puffing of his chest and his walking around. He got those from Mussolini. You know, with the clenching of the lips and the, you know, with the head nodding. That came from Mussolini. He literally has practiced just like Hitler did. He wants to be Adolf Hitler. Donald J. Trump, and that's his real last name, Donald J. Trump has brought Nazi Germany to the United States. It is time to stop, as you said, dancing around it and being afraid to call him what he is. Time to stop dancing around that and saying it's fascism. It is fascism, but you know what? So is Nazism. I am going to root out this vermin within us. Commie, Marxist, fascist, of which I am one, and radical leftist thugs. I'm going to root them out. Dehumanize them so that whatever happens to them is justified. He announced the plan that he is going to use the Department of Justice to arrest the whole Biden family, and he's going to have his former attorney general arrested. He's going to have Mark Esper arrested. He's going to have Milley arrested. Anybody who resisted his insurrection of January 6th as being traitors, he's going to suspend and destroy the Constitution of the United States. And I again remind all my gum nut friends that the Second Amendment is part of the Constitution. Once he has power, do you really think he's going to let you keep your guns? Once he has the army, he plans to implant within the government only people who have vowed a loyalty to him to run the military, to run the judicial system. If he tears up the Constitution, there is no Supreme Court. There are no federal courts. He is completely unchained. This is what you, Republicans, are wishing upon us because of your white fear, because of your ignorance, because you have the money. And that's what it's all about for all of you. And that's exactly the fear industrialists backed Hitler. They thought they could control him. And then he killed them and put other people in their place. There will be a reign of terror in this country that will absolutely destroy anybody who is not Christian, who is not white. He's already announced he's going to open up concentration camps for illegal immigrants. Think other people are going to find their way into those concentration camps? This is Nazi America. That's his dream. Pay attention, America. The Nazi movement is coming to you, and maybe for you. Don't call yourselves the Republicans anymore. You are the Nazi Party. You are the Fascist Party of America. And you got a great leader in Mike Johnson. He's perfect for you. Absolutely perfect. Want to keep going?
Yeah, I got that. It's amazing how this thinking has infiltrated so many parts of American life at this point. I've talked about it before on here. You know, I'm a flight sim enthusiast, and to that end, I'm sort of part of the flight sim community on social media. You know, I participate in YouTube live streams and all that. And part of the reason I do that is to get a break, a mental break, from parts of my life that I'm not in denial about, but that I need a break from. That includes watching the news, right, and dealing with all this right-wing nonsense. And even in that setting, the MAGAs always rear their heads, right? If you're in a live chat, it's only going to be a matter of time before somehow or other they've made a political point. And they're as loud. That's one of the things about them is they're so loud compared to people on the political center or political left. The MAGAs have no shame at all in their own ignorance. They are going to be heard, and so that's, you know, it's been hard to even stay engaged in that without having to put up with this. I was watching Bill Maher, who, you know, I can take him or leave him depending on what night it is, but he had on Friday evening, he had a panel that included a guy who, you know, he held in very high esteem. And they were talking about cultural issues, and the issue of LGBTQ came up. And Bill Maher asked, you know, because I guess what, there's an IA now, LGBTQIA, and the A, I think, stands for asexual, and Bill Maher was asking, you know, why do all these different groups want to associate themselves with each other? They're completely different. Sexual orientation and gender identity are two different things, and being asexual is a different thing, and so why are they all lumped together? And this guy, who he had on his panel, says, well, because they all have one thing in common. And Bill Maher perked up like, oh, what's that? And he said, well, all those groups define themselves primarily by their sexual behavior. And I almost fell out of my seat wondering, do you have to try to be that obtuse? Or does it come naturally? To suggest that gay people or transgender people define themselves by their sexual behavior rather than recognizing that their movement and their activism is the result of them being defined by their sexual behavior mm-hmm. by others, to my mind is breathtaking. And I wonder, was that, are you trying to be that stupid? Or does it come naturally? You have somebody who has spent their entire life being targeted by evangelical Christians, by the Catholic Church, by other forms of cultural and religious bigots and conservatives, being told their entire life that what they are is the worst possible thing you can be, that when they respond to it by quote-unquote coming out, or when they put a pride flag out, which, by the way, pride in this context means nothing more than the lack of shame. People who are refusing anymore to be ashamed of who and what they are. And so when in the face of this bigotry and this oppression, they come out and say, this is who I am, this is what I am, and I'm not ashamed of it, then they're accused of defining themselves by their sexual behavior. And by the way, that trope is getting tired too, that it's about behavior. It's not about behavior. It's about orientation. It's about innate, immutable characteristics that can't be changed. I love that, right? If you're gay, it's all about your conduct. It's not about your orientation. It's about your conduct. That's like saying it's okay to be hungry as long as you don't eat. It may sound like this is a disjointed conversation, but I'm trying to point out the pervasiveness of bigotry, of ignorance, of the kind of thinking that makes a society vulnerable to what Donald Trump is doing. And I know, again, you know, I don't want to start the whole polls thing. But the fact that Donald Trump, in any poll I've seen recently, is either tied or ahead of Joe Biden where it matters, under the circumstances that we're in, it's remarkable to me. We are in danger.
Go ahead.
That's it.
I will not minimize the fact that there is an attitude. And I'm not going to, again, I'm going to avoid going where you have to go to talk about why people back strong men. It's because they're too stupid to know otherwise. Mm-hmm. And they don't understand the issues or the complexity of them or the duty they have to their civil duties to vote and to understand the issues and to vote for people who stand for the government that you are in favor of, in this particular case, the Constitution of the United States. They're ready to vote for somebody in this country to tear up the Constitution without ever understanding what that really means. Well, sounds like a good idea to me. The stupidity, the ignorance of people who refuse to listen, refuse to understand what is at stake. Their attitude is, government's got nothing to do with me and doesn't answer to me, and so therefore I don't give a damn as long as I get my check at the end of the week and I can make my payments on my dually truck and I can pick up a six-pack and go home and sit in my 10-year-old chair wearing my wife beater T-shirt watching Ultimate Fighting. Because that's what Donald does. Oh, no, he wears a $10,000 suit to watch an Ultimate Fighting Championship, But that's what Donald does, and he's just like me. and looked at their kids and said, I'm not paying taxes to send you to school. You don't need to go to school. What makes you think that you can be better than me? What's wrong with my life? How many times have you heard me say this? And that's really what it is. I don't understand it, so you don't need to understand it, kid. You're 18. Go get a job. You don't need to go to college. Actually, right now, I wouldn't send my kid to college. But that's a story for another day. It really comes down to that point. We actually have a student at the school. And I was basically saying this about the Constitution in class maybe 3-4 weeks ago. The people who support the Second Amendment and think it's absolute and I can have a gun, in fact, I can have an automatic gun and you can't stop me, are in favor of tearing up the Constitution. I said, they're in favor of tearing up the Constitution. By the way, an amendment is part of the Constitution. If you tear up the Constitution, there is no Second Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
And once somebody's in power, do you really think they're going to let you own a gun? Seriously. Once the army is used for civil purposes, do you really think when they knock on your door that you're going to fight back and kill soldiers? They'll back off. You're right. I'm not going to get shot by you, pal. See that tank out there? We're going to blow your house to smithereens with you and your family in it. And then I'll come and get your gun and everything else you got in there. You don't think those things are going to happen? Then you're more morons than anything I could possibly. You are what you are because we've made you what you are. Or as Popeye said, I am what I am, and that's all that I am. You better wake up. Smell the gunpowder. Tired of preaching education. We've said this before, but is it not true, Brendan, that when you go into your first class in Constitutional Law 1, that those students that you have who are college graduates know less about the Constitution than you knew after you got out of middle school? That you have to start off from scratch, explaining to them that there are not 9 articles in the Constitution, like Donald said there was, or what the Constitution really means, what it's about, even in a history of how it came about. I mean, honestly, Brendan, do you really think they know more than you did when you got out of middle school?
Well, I always liken the Constitution to the Bible in this respect, that it's a document that many Americans revere that most of them haven't read.
I think that's a fair statement.
There's no question. You just hear people going on and on about the Constitution and you ask them what's in it. Just go to a Trump rally. Right.
Right.
And ask these people, do you revere the United States Constitution? Oh, yeah. You're going to get a lot of testosterone, Yeah. Ask them the first question about what's in the Constitution other than the Second Amendment. Right. They'll have no idea. And yet they profess to love it. But yeah, you can say the same thing about the Bible. And for many years of my own life, you know, I never read the Bible. I just listened to other people tell me what was in it. Then when I was in my 30s, believe it or not, I actually decided, you know, I've heard enough about this book from other people. And I read it from cover to cover, the entire thing. And came away, by the way, with a much different impression of what's
yeah,
in that
than
book.
They had, yes.
Yeah, right. than you know, what I'd been told. It pays to read stuff.
Now that you brought up the Bible, we have to talk about the man who is second in line to become president of the United
mm-hmm.
States.
Right.
Mike Johnson, the Secretary of State, the Speaker of the House of Representatives. This man is totally unknown to the general public, but extremely well known to white Christian nationalists. And he's smooth. He looks like a preacher. He is Jim Jordan on steroids, but he wears a jacket.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, you need to know that Mike Johnson played a very critical role in attempting to overthrow the election in 2020. He wrote the brief that was submitted to the Supreme Court in an attempt to stop the count of the electors, asking for it to be delayed. It was signed on to by 165 members of the United States House of Representatives, all Republicans. No one had to respond. The Supreme Court denied the petition without a response. Everybody thinks this guy's brilliant. He virulently is anti-abortion, anti-LGBTQ, and he's promoted the teaching of the Bible as a history book, a real history book. This is real, live, honest to goodness, truthful history to be taught mm-hmm. in the public schools. Therefore, we should all read the Christian Bible and believe the Christian Bible. His supporters say, you all are crazy. He doesn't believe in a theocracy. Really? In an interview to the Daily Signal, which is the news paper from the Heritage Foundation, not the Heritage Foundation that we grew up with, but the white nationalist Heritage Foundation. He gave an interview to a woman named Mary Margaret Olahan. And he said, and I'm quoting, that my Christian faith informs me of my politics. And he's hardly quiet about it. He brags about it. His central political philosophy, it was described as a rapid, uninterrogated ascension, even that makes his ascension more worrisome. I'm quoting, it's a central premise of the Bible that God invented civil government. Really? I thought Jesus said, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. Render unto God that which is God. In other words, Jesus preached separation of church and state. Am I missing something here, Brendan? I'm not Christian, so I wouldn't know.
No.
Okay. He sees government as a design of God. and a gift to mankind in a falling society. If you don't agree with him, you have to learn to agree with him. There's another paper called The Washington Stand, which is, what's the name of the group? The Family Research Council puts it out. A longtime friend of Johnson wrote an article, and I'm quoting the title, "Johnson Critics Mistake Christianity, American Principles for Theocracy." He believes, remember, there was a guy who ran for president against Trump in the primary, Ben Carson. Remember him, the neurosurgeon, works on people's brains? And he was asked a question at one of the debates. Which document's more important, the Bible or the Constitution? When you're president, when you're president, which of these two things is more important, the Bible or the Constitution? And that moron had the nerve to say, it depends on the issue. When you're the president of the United States, moron, and I think he had called him out for it at the time, there is your Bible for the government is the Constitution. Not your Bible for your Christianity. Johnson believes that just basic Christian belief coming right out of the Bible. That basic belief includes God is the one that ordains authority. That's what they said about kings, wasn't it? God is the one who gives delegated authority to human beings to wield it on his behalf. That's what they said about the kings in medieval days. Am I missing something here? Johnson's critics, according to one writer, are biblical illiterates who lack any understanding of Christianity. I understand Christianity. I don't believe in it. Don't mix the two together. People who don't believe in it, okay, don't understand Judaism. They don't have to understand it. They just have to know that it exists and understand that everybody's allowed to believe as they wish to believe. Or remember, if we don't do the Constitution, we don't have a First Amendment. So if Donald Trump decides Christianity is now going to be the official religion of the United States, that's what it will be. Oh, yeah, white Christian supremacy. Forgot about that. Johnson believes there are certain truths. Like regressive gender roles or creationalism, or that separation of church and state is a myth. It's not a myth. It's written in the frigging Constitution. It goes back to his God-invented civil government. He is a Christian Reconstructionist. The country has to be rebuilt around his Christian beliefs. This is a guy who, with another guy, goes on to porn sites to educate themselves about how bad porn is. This is a guy who says homosexuality was the reason why the Roman Empire fell. Maybe it's because, and think that's what's happening to the United States, and my answer to you is, maybe it's your obsession with this that is destroying the United States. If you ignore it, it won't go away, but you don't have to deal with it. You can go about your life and never speak one word to someone who's homosexual. That's up to you. But it doesn't mean that you destroy them or that they're wrong because your religion says so. Even the Pope is giving in. The only thing he didn't do this weekend is say that practicing homosexuals have the right to have what they call communion. But children raised by homosexuals can. It's about as far as I think the church is capable of going. But still, this is the guy that sits two heartbeats away from being president of the United States. I don't know which is worse, the fact that he thinks we should have a king or that Donald Trump thinks he is the king. Wow. I don't know. Third base. Always third base.
Mm-hmm.
We had a lot of other stuff here. You want to take off on Axelrod or you want to save that for next week?
No.
I'm going to tee you up. Come on.
If for anybody who doesn't know, Axelrod is a Democratic strategist who's at the forefront now of calling for Joe Biden to reconsider running for office because of his age.
Can you imagine what would happen to the Democratic Party if he decided not to run now?
Yeah, right.
You want to see, you think the Republicans are self-destructing? Wait till you see what Democrats do, because that's what Democrats do, by the way.
Yeah, I know, right. Yeah. It is, when you and I talked earlier this morning, I mean, I think you're right. It's too late. That ship has sailed. There's no way at this point for Democrats to run with anybody other than Joe Biden. So you open up the doors now, you're going to have people throwing their hats into the ring, you know, every one of whom is vulnerable for different reasons.
Right.
But
in all the factions of the Democratic Party falling apart
mm-hmm.
from the consolidation and the unity that they've been showing for the last 3 years.
Right. Right.
I don't know what to do with that. I wanted to bring up one last thing. We can talk about Axelrod and the fact that his day is over. He made Barack mm-hmm. Obama president of the United States, and so he thinks he can find someone young and push them in, and I'll be important again. I think that's David Axelrod. But in Ohio this past Tuesday,
yeah,
they passed a constitutional amendment to enshrine abortion rights under defined by Roe v. Wade into their constitution with 57% of the vote. And with polls showing up to 80% of the vote, or 80% of the people in Ohio being in favor of that particular constitutional amendment. The Republican legislature of the state of Ohio has not given up yet. First, they tried to raise the bar to 60%, and they lost that special election vote. They want to change the Constitution so it could only be amended by a 60% vote, thinking we can find a way to stay under 60%.
Mm-hmm.
But now they've decided they're going to pass a statute which denies the courts of the state of Ohio the right to review any law they pass as to its constitutionality related to that amendment and to any restrictions that they place on abortion. Even though their constitution may forbid what they do, they can't do anything about it. The courts are denied the power to review them. Well, number one, that sort of belies the purpose of separation of powers. That's number one, okay? That's the number one power all courts have. But number two, It's basically saying, screw you, people of Ohio. We don't care what you want. And screw democracy. We don't need that either. You got us, and that's all you need. And we're smarter than you, and we're better than you in a multiplicity of ways, and as a result of which, you will do as you are told. Mm-hmm. Want to see democracy fail? Now, I could just see it now. The courts of Ohio determining the constitutionality of a law that says they can't determine the constitutionality of a law.
Right.
Okay, that ought to be, that'll be interesting to tell. Talk about a circular argument. Wow. You get dizzy listening to that one. Let's destroy democracy one little step at a time. Democracy dies at night. It dies with your eyes closed. It dies in your ignorance. It dies in your ability to ignore what's going on around you. Somehow or another, I think the people of the state of Ohio are going to rise up. And they may turn the reddest of red states into one of the bluest of blue in 2024. As they lose the state legislature and Mike Devine gets recalled from his governorship. There are going to be ballot initiatives all over the place to pull everybody out to vote in Ohio. It's going to be interesting. You believe that they would do something like that? Pass a law that says you don't have the right to review what we do? I thought it was the other way around. You can't pass a law on anything that we determine to be unconstitutional. Isn't that the rule? If it's unconstitutional, you can't pass a law to overturn us?
Amen.
Isn't that what you teach, Brendan?
Yeah. That's.
But I thought. Yeah. I could be wrong, but I thought that's what you taught.
Well, good. Now, maybe there'll be another constitutional amendment on the ballot in 2024 to write. Now Ohio needs a new amendment to undo the legislature's law, saying that courts don't have the jurisdiction to review the constitutionality of their own laws, right? So go ahead, get another amendment on the ballot and bring people out to vote in 2024. Yeah, turn it blue.
Somehow I think they're going to do it a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, they ought to do
and
that,
you know,
too.
I'd love if they did. I would love if they do that, and I would love to see the people of Ohio get so angry at it that they do away with all of them that want to do away with the Constitution, including Jimmy No Jacket. That would be interesting. We never did get to Ellison Powell's deposition, but that we'll get to that.
Yeah. Hey, we had bigger fish to fry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or the fact that Donald Trump's lawyers have shown that they literally are unscrupulous and unethical.
Shocking.
By lying to Jack Smith's people. Yeah, shocking. I'm appalled. I'm shocked. Okay? Okay. I can't believe things like that happen. I mean, that's like saying, I can't believe that there's organized crime in New Jersey, okay? Okay? I'm shocked. I'm appalled. Okay?
God.
Okay.
Who knew?
Well, I think we hit 11 o'clock. Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
I don't know. How about that? We never did get to the SCOTUS ethics code, but we can talk about that next week.
Yeah, we got plenty to talk about next week.
The SCOTUS non-enforceable, non-really ethics code. Okay?
Right. Okay. The SCOTUS, too late ethics code, right?
Okay, but they did do one good thing last week, but we'll talk in an oral argument. They did something really good last week, but we'll talk about that next week. We're not in a big hurry. The opinion's not out yet, so it's not a problem.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Good.
Well, that was a lot of fun. I think I'm going to go take a break back and take a nap. Okay?
Yeah, there you go. Now that we've got Sir Hezzy thoroughly depressed, we can move on now.
No, I'm good. Right.
Cheer up, Hezzy. You're going to have surgery next week. That'll be more fun than this one. Okay?
Oh,
absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
All right.
I wish you the best. Stay safe.
Be
yep.
well, gentlemen.
Surgery, okay?
Have a great week. Yep.
We'll
talk soon.
Okay, we'll see you next week, okay?
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Take care. Be well.
Take care. Happy
Thanksgiving.
No, we won't say happy Thanksgiving. We'll do that next week. Okay, see you next week,
okay.
Everybody. Bye-bye.
There we have it. None other than Cooley Law School professors, Brendan Leary, Jeffrey Swartz. Always a pleasure to hear every word. It is so heavy with weight. And it's just brilliant stuff. What can I tell you? Okay. So let's move on to some other things that you may find of interest. There will be a moment. I do have to apologize. I had not noticed because I wasn't looking at the screen, and I don't know why I was deflected for some reason. I was just involved in listening to what Mr. Swartz and Mr. Beery were talking about. And so I was literally just focused on that alone. And I wasn't looking at the screen. And when I did, my eyes focused and I saw that we had somebody on hold for about 6 minutes. And I don't know if they're listening, but my apology to them. And I don't know why I was, I was so engaged and engrossed by what the two professors were saying. I was just thinking rather than focusing on and doing two things at once. I should have been able to look at the screen, which I can see, and I see it all the time. It's on there for me to see, but I was so immersed in what they were talking about that I just didn't notice. So again, my apology. And I hope that I never repeat that I don't know what the right term would be, but I don't want to repeat that again, and I will focus my attention to not do that again, ever. And even if I'm immersed in what's being discussed, which I usually am, I need to focus on the screen just to see in case somebody comes on. So hopefully this will not happen again. It's conceivable it will, but I will certainly focus on making sure that it doesn't to the best of my ability. So let's look at some other things that have really become quite pertinent. There's a third round of U.S. sanctions against Hamas as it focuses on money transfers from the Gaza Strip. So from Iran to Gaza. And it seems that the United States today said it imposed a third round of sanctions on a group of Hamas officials, members of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, who worked to transfer money from Iran to Gaza, and a Lebanese money exchange service that facilitates the transfers. Well, the Treasury Department sanctions coordinated with the United Kingdom come in response to the surprise October 7 attack by Hamas on Israel that left roughly 1,200 people dead or kidnapped. The sanctions block access to the U.S. property and bank accounts and prevent the targeted people and companies from doing business with Americans. And this and two previous rounds of sanctions against Hamas and its affiliates are aimed at protecting the international financial system from abuse by Hamas militants and their enablers, the Treasury Department said. So the State Department also is designating a Palestinian Islamic Jihad military leader for diplomatic sanctions. So we'll see how all this goes. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said in an emailed statement that, quote, together with our partners, we are decisively moving to degrade Hamas's financial infrastructure, cut them off from outside funding, and block the new funding channels they seek to finance their heinous acts, end quote. Well, the White House has said it has yet to uncover information that Iran, the principal financial and military sponsor of Hamas, was directly involved in the multi-pronged Hamas operation against Israel. However, the United States has conducted three strikes over the last 2 weeks against Iranian-tied weapons depots in Syria to retaliate for the more than 50 rocket and drone attacks that militant groups have launched since October 7 against U.S. bases in Iraq and Syria, which have caused dozens of minor injuries among U.S. personnel. President Joe Biden and other officials in his Democratic administration have traveled to the Middle East to show support for Israel and have tried to tamp down tensions in the escalating war between Israel and Hamas, but those efforts have faced massive setbacks. More than 11,000 Palestinians, two-thirds of them women and children, have been killed since the war began, according to the health ministry in Gaza, which does not differentiate between civilian and militant deaths. So the shadowy leader of Hamas's military wing, Mohammed Daif, said that the October 7 assault on Israel was in response to the 16-year blockade of Gaza. Israeli raids inside West Bank City over the past year, increasing attacks by settlers on Palestinians, and the growth of settlements, among other reasons. So Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who declared Israel to be at war, said its military would use all of its power to destroy Hamas's capabilities, quote, all the places that Hamas hides and operate from, end quote, he said, quote, we will turn them into ruins. So that's where things sit at the moment. This is one of the latest updates. Thousands more are fleeing northern Gaza as Israeli troops battle Palestinian militants. Fighting between Israeli troops and Palestinian militants in northern Gaza caused another 200,000 people to flee the south to flee south in the past 10 days. The U.S., the United Nations Humanitarian Office said today. The humanitarian office, known as OCHA, said only one hospital in the north is capable of treating patients. Some of the fighting is around hospitals where patients, newborns, and medics are stranded with no electricity and dwindling supplies. Israel accuses Hamas of using hospitals as cover for its fighters, alleging that Hamas has set up main command centers in and beneath Shifa Hospital, the largest in the besieged territory. And both Hamas and Shifa Hospital staff deny the Israeli allegations. The southern part of Gaza is not much safer. Israel carries out frequent airstrikes against what it says are militant targets that often kill women and children. The southern part of Gaza is, well, I read that, and more than two-thirds of Gaza's population of 2.3 million have fled their homes since the war began. Gaza City, the largest urban area in the territory, is the focus of Israel's campaign to crush Hamas following the militant group's deadly October 7 incursions into southern Israel that set off the war. More than 11,000 Palestinians, two-thirds of them women and minors, have been killed since the war began, according to the health ministry in Gaza, which does not differentiate in civilian and militant deaths. About 2,700 people have been reported missing, and more than 1,200 people in Israel died, most of them in the Hamas attack, and about 240 hostages were taken from Israel into Gaza by Palestinian militants. Let me just see some other things. One second. And the European Union nations are condemning Hamas for what they describe as the use of hospitals, civilians, as human shields. And in Brussels, we hear that the 27 European Union nations have jointly condemned Hamas for what they describe as the use of hospitals and civilians as human shields in the war against Israel. European Union Affairs Chief Josep Borrell said on Monday that at the same time the bloc asked Israel for, quote, maximum restraint in targeting in order to avoid human casualties, end quote. At a meeting of the bloc's foreign affairs ministers, Borrell brandished a statement he issued on behalf of the 27 nations as a show of unity following weeks of often contrasting statements on how the group should Israel-Hamas war. Quote, you know how difficult it has been the last times after the vote in the United Nations, where countries were voted in different ways to present a completely united approach, Borrell said, only hours after the European Union professed unity over the Israel-Hamas war on October 28. The member states were totally split in a vote on a General Assembly resolution calling for humanitarian truces in Gaza, leading to a cessation of hostilities between Israel and Hamas. One second. One second here. The last government shutdown deadline ousted the House Speaker, and this week's showdown could be easier. It seems that the last time Congress tried to fund the government to present a federal shutdown, it cost House Speaker Kevin McCarthy's job. This time, the new Speaker, Mike Phil Johnson, Republican from Louisiana, appears on track for a better outcome Tuesday as the House prepares to vote on a stopgap package to keep the government running into the new year. If approved, the Senate would act next act ahead of Friday's shutdown deadline. I see we've got a caller on the line, so let's get that caller. Good morning, caller. Thanks for waiting.
Peace, how are you today?
Hello. Thank goodness, okay. Yes, I can. I can hear you well. What is your first name?
The first name I use and authorized to use is Naraka Kodasha. So that's the name I'm
Can you repeat
authorized
that again? Because I couldn't hear it well enough to just to repeat it so I could say hello. Would you say
I was saying that I'm only authorized to use Naraka Kodasha through Public Law 97-280, and that
okay, Naraka. Well, nice meeting you. So, what was your question, or do you have a statement you want to make?
My question is, as far as the Constitution and the Federal Reserve Act, does it apply to the teachings of Jesus Christ? Because, you see, I'm in a legal bind right now that's dealing with claiming my national inheritance and birthright as far as Title 28, Title 28, given the sovereign immunity, that's a Code 1604. So I'm basically just, claiming my national inheritance and a free man on the land as a part of Israel. And so,
well, you know what? I think you're asking a question that need and can only be answered by our two constitutional experts, Professor Jeffrey Swartz and Brendan Beery.
According to the U.S., we exercise it. So I'm saying the people that made the Constitution anyway they were you know, heavily influenced of Christianity or the Bible, what you call it, Israel, because you see, it says one nation under God. That's the Pledge of Allegiance.
No, I don't disagree with what you're saying. I think what I'm suggesting.
But I'm basically saying that it's coming. I'm saying that I'm asking a question in regards of the Constitution, and it applies to being to New York. Does the Federal Reserve Act or the Constitution apply to the teachings of Jesus Christ?
No, I hear what you're saying.
I see that it doesn't, because what is the Constitution or the Federal Reserve Act even have the branches or delegated authority to do such an act? It would be through what we call the Bible. You know, they were the first, they don't kill, have commandments. So that's why I'm asking today, because, you know, it's just so much going on as far as gaining income and people being the workers of iniquity, looking at, like, Job and Job and the Bible spell the same thing. They're looking like symbols of that. So, you know, I'm in D.C. And
listen, I have to stop you just for a moment, just so I hear what you're saying. But the questions that you're asking are beyond my capacity. And unfortunately, maybe you were the gentleman that was online that called us when we had the first hour when we were talking about the U.S. Constitution. And we're talking about those issues. However, the two professors that would be able to answer that question come on the broadcast every Tuesday morning from 10 o'clock to 11. And I beg you to consider giving us a call then, because they'll be able to answer your question and respect your question as well. But they have the knowledge.
Let me ask this.
Sure, go ahead.
How does the U.S. or the Constitution applies to anyone, and how do they prove that jurisdiction applies without giving, let's say, voluntary consent?
I don't know.
Well, that's something to think about, because if you're not mastering things out here, then other things are out here mastering you. So whoever's listening right now, they don't know how it applies to them. Well, then it governs your things that govern your daily activities. You don't know that how it applies to you is very important for you to know.
Well, we're repeating ourselves. The bottom line is, I don't have the intellectual capacity to compare the two and to tell you if one has jurisdiction over the other. I tend to think that there needs, from my conceptual concept, I think you can weigh both and come to a conclusion, and it doesn't have to fall on the side of the Constitution necessarily. It may fall on the religious perspective, or maybe vice versa. But I don't know how the Constitution views it, and if the Constitution has a right to supersede the religious perspective of people and of the different religions. I don't know if the Constitution has that right. So I'm uncertain if that can be construed to control or define what and cannot be worshipped or what can be ascribed to religion. I don't know. And that's what they can answer, because they have the capacity.
What about having the Treasury Department sign for all the bills that comes through your door? Don't you have bills?
No, I understand. So again, the Treasury does is defined by the U.S. Constitution. So I think that too falls in line with the two professors who have the knowledge and the understanding.
You don't have to have the knowledge. You can just, it's a comment. You can just, you know, it's a question in the comment. You can look at it as rhetorical. I'm just talking to you about, you know, the U.S. laws and the Constitution thereof. You know, it's very funny to me, right? Just me talking to you. It's very funny to me that a constitution, right, that has articles in it and so on, has a motto. Do you know the motto for the U.S.? It's on the back of a dollar bill. It's called "In God We Trust." A motto is a law.
Yes.
So
right.
If you see that, you know, I'm not going back to the God subject, which I should, because at the first and at the end of everything is, you know, God. Nothing without that. But
I agree
I'm saying
with
that.
That
yo, yeah, yeah. So if you agree with that, right, then
I do.
You know what that makes you? You know what that makes you? Exceptional to others. Because right now people
yeah,
are
I do believe at
like
the end
background.
Of the day that it's God has given us what we have today. And the only people who mess it up are people. So quite often because they don't adhere to religious concepts, whatever their religion is.
Do you know what
they
espouse it, but
they don't know it.
You know what the CFR 525-329 is? You know what that is? Well, that means that the U.S. has jurisdiction to apply or assume anything over you, far as they can look at you and say, well, you seem sick to me. Let's take them to the hospital. And then they have the right. You'd be like, you don't have the right. But then they say, well, what's your name? And what you going to tell them? Yeah, see, once you do that, you tell them your name, you tell them that birthday. They say, yeah, we got the right. So my thing is to break the strongholds and show that people do have rights, God-given rights, right, where they should not be persuaded or coerced or threatened to be pushed anywhere. You see, if you look at the U.S. Constitution and the Treasury, right? You'll see a resemblance in it. Where though you'll say these two things right here are like Taoism, but it's more of a Taoism thing because they're working hand in hand. And so if the government is working with the Federal Reserve is working with the government, and those branches are working thereof, it's a good question to ask, wait a minute, am I binded to a contract with you all? So that would make you part owner as well, or at least part something. And therefore, like if you go to court, you say, well, this is a mistrial. Because how can you have a party of the same people or the same corporation going against each other? You're the defendant representing U.S., the prosecutor representing U.S., and the judge representing U.S.
Well, look, again, I hear what you're saying, and I tend to agree that there is a place for God and there is a place for you know, the U.S. Constitution, and there has to be accommodation there.
If you're a part of the U.S., right, let's just say you're a part of the U.S., besides God, let's just say you're a part of the U.S., and since you're a part of the U.S., you decided to, let's say you go to court, and they, you know, take you for a speeding ticket, whatever, you know, you can easily get out by saying this is a mistrial, because how can three parties be of the same group? You can't do that.
Look,
that's,
you know, you
try,
look, listen, you know, you have to respect the fact that you have great interest in these issues, and that's fine. But I'm giving you an opinion, you know, and I think that there is a balancing act between the two. Because we live here in the United States, they've got rules and regulations.
No,
they created
a
constitution, but there's also a Bible, and people adhere to that as well.
Do you understand the difference between the United States and the land? The United States is a corporation.
Do you understand that I told you from the very beginning that the experts on the U.S. Constitution are on Tuesdays from 10 to 11?
I get that.
Well, good, then get it and call back on Tuesday.
But I was just having a conversation with you, brother. There's no need
I'm not having, you know what? I hate to tell you, I've spent literally 25 minutes with you on the phone when I have a show. Out of respect.
Yeah, I'm just going with your show.
Well, fine. This is not a discussion that I can afford because I've got a program to do. And I'm doing it only out of respect. Not to assist you in any way.
Program. My fault.
We got a 2-hour show. That's the time, but I have other things to cover. So listen.
Okay.
I hope you'll call us on Tuesday of next week or whenever it suits you, because that's when they're on, and we'll have all the questions that you're asking, all very pertinent. I know that they're capable of giving you an answer as well as an opinion. So they can define what, if there is any overplay by the U.S. Constitution against the religion, or if religion holds sway over the Constitution, and how one can balance that, if it can be balanced at all, or if the Constitution permits that balance. I don't know if it does. That's a question, and I think that's your question, because I don't know if the Constitution restricts religion. But then religion came first, didn't it?
Right.
So I don't know how and what right the Constitution may have or could have that restricts religion. I tend to think it does not.
It actually exhausts it. I'm just being real with you, not to start the program, but it exhausts it in every way. People in jail and prison can practice religion.
Yeah, I know people can practice, but I think you're posing a question of whether the Constitution denies religiosity or the abiding by religion.
No, I'm just stating the Pledge of Allegiance. Isn't it one nation under God?
Yes, it is, but, you know, that's because the Constitution was put together at the time of the conception, the building of America, and it made sense, and it still makes sense today. So what's the question then? So you're basically saying it is under God. So who's questioning that it is under God? I don't. Do you?
I say Israel is right now, because Israel is questioning one. I would say that I am, because I could say I personally have a case where, though I'm stating, you know, religiously exercising my religious rights and God-given rights is always, you know, being violated. Because if you look,
Israel is a nation predominantly Jewish, but there are also people
in America is a nation predominantly Roman.
Predominantly what?
Roman, because you look around, the judge is taking an axe as like he was in Rome. You know, it's all built like Rome, like Roman.
Oh no, you're going off the deep end here. I'm sorry. Look, the United States is not Roman.
Look at the hair that George Washington.
How's it Roman? What are you talking about? What does Roman mean? You mean they're from Italy?
More so, Italy, Greece. You know, but I'm not being, you know, funny. I'm just saying that the way the structure was built as architecture, like the pillars, everything else that you see around you.
What has that got to do with anything in the Constitution and religion? Tell me what has that to do with anything.
Well, you got to understand. See, the Constitution was built off a pillar from the religion. So that's why it's given the sovereign immunity. Far as like the religion is given the sovereign immunity. So
I know that. So what's the problem? What is your problem? And what has it got to do with Israel? And what's it got to do with Italy? And what's it got to do with Greece or anywhere else?
Israel should have a sovereign immunity guarantee. Their sovereign immunity should be guaranteed. Everyone should. Because if you look at it,
immune from what?
There's a title and there's a code, huh?
Immunity from what?
From the U.S.
What should Israel be immune from?
From the U.S. jurisdiction. Everyone is under assumption that everyone is under the U.S. jurisdiction. No one is bigger than the law. But there is people that's bigger than the law.
What do you mean U.S.? What Are you saying U.S. jurisdiction to over Israel in what way?
In a way that we are free men on the land, that the U.S. is just a
you're
corporation made up of courts.
Oh,
yeah,
stop it.
They,
you know, you're throwing all kinds of crap into this discussion, but your opinion started off with simply whether the Constitution forbid or overwhelmed religion or
no,
the other
I
way
said,
around,
I,
or
no,
if they
I
were balanced and permitted one another
that's
to coexist.
What I said when I came on here, man. When
well,
I
you
came
know
on
what?
Here,
have
you,
a good day.
Did the Federal
don't
Reserve
bother.
Act, you
thanks
know,
very much. Have a good day.
Jesus Christ.
Great. Good about Christ. Unbelievable. All right, let's look at some other things that we need to cover. Bear with me a moment. This is the latest information. The new speaker, Mike Johnson, formally endorses Donald Trump a step beyond predecessor Kevin McCarthy. So the House Speaker, Mike Johnson, endorsed Donald Trump for president on Tuesday, a move that was a symbolic departure from his ousted predecessor leading the House. And Johnson, an allied defender of the former president, said in an interview on CNBC Tuesday morning, quote, "I have endorsed him wholeheartedly," end quote. Johnson, a little-known Louisiana congressman, became speaker late last month when Kevin McCarthy was ousted by a hard right hand of their fellow Republicans. Now, though McCarthy was a longtime Trump ally and one of the first elected officials to publicly align himself with Trump in the wake of the January 6, 2021 insurrection at the United States Capitol by Trump's supporters, he had stopped short of formally backing Trump's third, had drawn the ire of Trump allies after he questioned in an interview this summer whether Trump was the strongest candidate among the then-crowded field of GOP rivals. And the field has shrunk in recent weeks, though Trump's lead has remained fixed. Now, Trump has celebrated Johnson's ascension to Speaker, calling him MAGA, Make America Great Again, Mike Johnson. Johnson's comments came hours after the New York Times reported on an August 2015 Facebook post that Johnson made before he was elected to Congress, in which he criticized Trump, then the Republican nominee, saying, quote, "He lacks the character and the moral center we desperately need again in the White House," end quote. So in response to someone commenting on the post, the newspaper reported that Johnson was, quote, "I am afraid he would break more things than he fixes. He is a hothead by nature, and that is a dangerous trait to have in a commander-in-chief," end quote. Well, Johnson, a social conservative, later became a steadfast defender of Trump, notably during his first impeachment in 2019 and through the 2020 election, echoing some of Trump's conspiracy theories about his loss to Joe Biden in the presidential election and filing a brief in a lawsuit that sought to overturn Joe Biden's 2020 presidential election bid. Well, Johnson reiterated that on Tuesday, saying in the interview that he was one of the closest allies President Trump had in Congress. Johnson's endorsement only firms up what is increasingly politically clear, that Trump is the Republican Party's frontrunner heading toward 2024, and few GOP leaders are willing or able to stand in his way. The Speaker's backing of Trump charts the course for other House Republicans and leaves those GOP lawmakers who prefer an alternative candidate increasingly isolated in their party with few options. So while some more current, centrist conservative Republicans may not want to support Trump, particularly in congressional districts Biden won last time, they have few avenues in the Republican Party to muscle a different outcome in the presidential nominating contest. So really unbelievable what's happening on the national stage. that this is the argument of the day. let's look at what's going on with Biden. Biden wants to show he's focused on Asia Pacific while dealing with the Russia, Ukraine, and the East wars. So President Joe Biden is looking to use this weekly summit of Asia Pacific leaders to show world leaders the United States has the gumption, attention span, and money to focus on the region, given even as it grapples with a multitude of foreign and domestic policy crises. Biden's highly anticipated meeting with Chinese President Xi Jinping on Wednesday is the main event of his four-day visit to San Francisco, where leaders from the 21 economies that make up the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Forum are gathering for their annual summit. The talks with Xi are of enormous importance as the leaders of the world's two biggest economies try to find a measure of stability after what's been a difficult year for U.S.-China relations. But the White House also wants to demonstrate to APEC leaders that Biden can remain focused on the Pacific while also trying to keep the Israel-Hamas war from exploding into a broader regional conflict and to persuade Republican lawmakers to continue to spend billions more on the costly Ukrainian effort to repel Russia's nearly 21-month-old invasion. Now, President Biden this coming week will be doing a lot more than just meeting with President Xi. White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan told reporters in Washington yesterday. He added that Biden would put forward his economic vision for the region, make the case that the United States is, quote, the very eminent driver, end quote, for sustainable economic growth in the Asia-Pacific, and hold the region out as critical to U.S. economic growth. White House officials say they are cognizant that fellow APEC nations want to see better dialogue between the United States and China because it reduces the risk of regional conflict. At the same time, they also know that others in the region are concerned that the Pacific is too often seen through the prism in which the dominant power centers in Washington and Beijing, making decisions for the region without engagement from less powerful nations. To that end, the White House is expected to unveil new initiatives to advance clean economy investments and develop anti-corruption and taxation policies through its Indo-Pacific Economic Forum, an economic strategy announced last year aimed at countering Beijing's commercial strength in the region. The strategy, known by the acronym IPEF, was designated to foster trade and demonstrate American commitment to the region after then-President Donald Trump announced in 2017 that the U.S. was withdrawing from the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP, an Obama-era trade deal with 12 countries. The U.S. is really aiming to use APEC as a way to demonstrate its lasting economic commitment to the region overall, said Niels Graham, the Associate Director for the Atlantic Council Geoeconomic Center. Much of the APEC's membership is, quote, tepid at best, end quote, on IPEF, said Joshua Kurlancik, a senior fellow for Southeast Asia at the Council on Foreign Relations. While TPP fell apart under Trump, the region has seen major trade deals sealed in recent years involving China and other major regional economies. APEC members have some interest in aspects of IPEF, such as efforts aimed at bolstering supply chain resilience and the clean energy economy, but want to see Biden create further access to U.S. markets. Biden, during his presidency, has declined to pursue new comprehensive free trade agreements with other countries. Administration officials quietly argue that while such pacts promote global commerce, they are viewed suspiciously by Americans and some in Congress as a vehicle for sending factory jobs overseas. And Biden on Monday welcomed Indonesian President Joko Widodo, a fellow APEC leader, to the White House for talks before both traveled to San Francisco. The Oval Office visit came at a somewhat awkward moment as Widodo, the leader of the world's most populous Muslim country, has been fiercely critical of Israel's operations in the Gaza Strip. Biden, meanwhile, has been unapologetic in standing staunchly by Israel and backing its right to defend itself following the October 7 attacks by Hamas militants that left 1,200 people dead. Well, Israel's retaliatory operations in Gaza have killed more than 11,000, sparking outrage from a slew of world leaders. The Indonesian president, in a speech at Georgetown University on Monday, lamented that, quote, human life seems meaningless, end quote, as Israel prosecutes its operations, end quote. Well, their differences on the Israel-Hamas war notwithstanding, Biden made clear during his sit-down with Widodo that he's looking to improve ties with the Southeast Asian power on combating the climate crisis and other issues. The White House effort to herd APEC members to sign on to a summit, concluding a joint declaration, a fixture at most international summits, could be complicated by diverging views among members on the Israel, Hamas, and Ukraine war. Quote, we're certainly working for having a strong consensus, a statement in APEC for the leaders to be able to release at the end of the week, said Ambassador Matt Murray, the senior U.S. official for APEC. Among close allies to be in San Francisco are Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida, South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol, and Philippine President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. Historically, foster relations between South Korea and Japan have rapidly thawed over the last year as they share concerns about China's assertiveness in the Pacific and North Korea's persistent nuclear threats. Biden is expected to remind Xi about the U.S. commitment to the Philippines following a recent episode in which Chinese ships blocked and collided with two Philippine vessels off a contested shoal in the South China Sea. According to a senior administration who spoke on the condition of anonymity to preview some of Biden's agenda, the Philippines and other neighbors of China are resisting Beijing's sweep territorial claims over virtually the entire area of the sea. The potential for a government shutdown is also looming over the summit, with the current stopgap spending measures set to expire on Friday. House Speaker Mike Johnson unveiled a proposal on Saturday that would extend funding for some agencies and programs until January 19th. The stopgap measure excludes the roughly $106 billion funding requested by Biden for Israel, Ukraine, and the U.S. border with Mexico. Sullivan warned that a government shutdown would be, quote, a devastating blow to U.S. standing around the globe. Quote, it would send a signal to the world that the United States cannot pull together on a bipartisan basis to sustain government funding and to show a united face to the world at a moment when you see this turbulence around the world, Sullivan had said. So that's where we're at. Unbelievable, huh? Okay, bear with me one moment. Just bear with me a second. Let's just see if there's anything else to cover with you. Bear with me a moment. One second. All right, one more minute here. Let's see if I can get to this. Okay. Let's This, I think, is really quite important. Evidently, last 15 minutes or so of the broadcast, a worsening warming is hurting people in all regions. U.S. climate assessments are showing. So bear with me a moment as I try to pull this up. 1 second. Okay, for some reason I'm having difficulty loading this up. Okay. I don't know, for some reason it's not working. Let me just see if we can use this. It's just not functioning for some reason. All right, let me see. I'm going to try to do this a little differently. Let's see if this works. Bear with me a moment. Okay, let me see if this will work. Maybe this way will work. Okay. Hopefully this will come up. Not sure. No, I'm having trouble. So, whatever the case is, then... I think that we'll just need to close up. It's about 12 minutes too, but I can't seem to access the files that I was looking for. Who knows, some sort of glitch, and all kinds of glitches of late on the internet. It's absolutely mind-boggling. So we'll see how things go and what happens with them. So I want to thank you for being with us today. Thanks for your patience. Thanks for our caller. Thanks the call, unfortunately, that I didn't see in enough time to get their call when they called in. Hopefully they will also consider calling if it was with respect to the Constitution, and hopefully they'll consider calling us next week. And I will be diligent in making sure that I don't make a blunder and stop viewing my screen that shows me when people are calling in. So, again, my apologies. So, all the best, folks. Thanks for being with us, and have a good day. Goodbye.